Why did the Lord suddenly start talking about value? Arjuna's original question in the Bhagavad, in the 12th chapter was, who is a better devotee? One who worships you with the form or one who worships you as the formless? Because that was his doubt, because he was taught from the Upanishads that the Lord is formless, all-pervading. And then he saw Lord Krishna in that divine form, and so he said, in the 11th chapter where he saw the Virat Roop, the cosmic form. And so his question was very legitimate, very appropriate, and the teacher answered it very beautifully. He said, for those who worship the form, Maya Veshya Manoye Mam Nitya Yukta Upasate Shraddhaya Parayopetaha Teme Yukta Tamamataha. He says, those who put their mind totally in me, seeing their form, and Nitya Yukta, and always they're connected to me with Shraddha, they are the best devotees. But how about the formless? Then he told us about the qualities of the all-pervading reality. So that Lord who is all-pervading, is the permanent, is the substratum, is the support of the universe, is unmanifest, cannot be seen or known by the senses. That is the nature of the unmanifest. And for that, you have to see him in all the people, in all the beings, in all the bhutas. See him everywhere, at all times. Because that concept of this reality cannot be grasped with the intellect, cannot be seen with the eyes, cannot be heard with the ears, but its manifestation is this whole universe. And so when you see that one Lord, the Creator, as the whole universe, then slowly, slowly, your vision becomes clearer. Not only that, but when you see the Lord in that particular form, you not only love that form. You say you love either Jesus or Krishna or Shiva or Mother Goddess, but behind that form, you penetrate that and see. So one who sees me in the form, and then through the form, he can actually penetrate and see that this form represents that reality. And all forms of the Lord, it does not matter whether he is in a church or a temple or in a Buddhist monastery. Wherever you see the form, you see that one reality. So all the pictures, all the forms of the Lord are that one reality. And so then he said that depending on your level of your vastness, for some of us, those who are very close to sainthood, you know, people like Buddha and all, who went before he left the palace, they only need a little bit of, you know, connection to the Lord, and they need the, maybe a teacher or somebody to tell them, and then they, like there was a saint named Nisargadatta Maharaj in India who was selling bidis, making these cigarettes, handmade, and all he had needed was one guru came and told him, you are that reality. That's all he told him, and the guru left. Now this person was an uneducated bidi maker, never went to school, never went to college, had never studied Sanskrit, Upanishads, nothing. All he understood, I am that. And so for 2.5 years, he kept on thinking about it. By that, not that body, but that consciousness, that is who I really am. That is my true nature. And once he understood that, he just 2.5 years it took him, and he realized. He became a realized master. And after that, the words that came out of his mouth were so brilliant and so advanced, you would think that it is a great scholar who is talking. And after that, he went back to making bidis, but he was a realized soul. So, but then there are others who don't have that, maybe who are not that advanced. So then he says, through practice, again and again, remind Abhyas Yogena Tata Mam Ichchaptum Dhananjaya. Through practice, you bring your mind to me. And then, if you cannot do that, then he says, take me to work, devote all activities to me, and do your work, every activity constantly devoted to me. Remember me at all times. But if you even cannot do that, at work I forget you, Lord, what can I do? I get so busy in my work, I don't have time. So he says, if you cannot even remember me at work, then devote the results to me. Devote the results to me. Oh Lord, if I had a success, I thank you, because whatever my abilities to do are all from you. So far the teaching is going very logically. Then suddenly the Lord starts in the 13th verse, without any introduction, Advaishta Sarva Bhuta Nam Maitra Karuna Evacha Nirmamo Nirahankaraha Samadukha Sukha Kshami. That we studied last week. We talked about values and valuables and why values are important. And the first verse where he said that this wise person does not hate anybody, loves everyone, is compassionate to all, is friendly to all, and is balanced in joy and sorrow, and he is forgiving, he is very forbearing. Such a person is my devotee. Why did he do that? Because the 12th chapter would not be complete without these qualities. Because what Krishna is telling us, that if you want to be my devotee, or if you want to be a devotee of the Lord, you have to have these 32 values, the 32 qualities. So the idea being that it does not mean that, oh, I have to go out and develop these 32 and then only I'll come to the temple and Lord, I'll pray to you. It does not mean that. But what it means is that these values are benchmarks that we have to apply. Like in science, when you're doing research, there are certain benchmarks you have to reach. And so I have to reach there, so I should start and I should put my effort in acquiring these values. And so we studied those last week. Seven of them we studied last week in verse number 13. So the idea is that if I want to say that I am a devotee of the Lord, then I should have these values. Only then I can be a true devotee of the Lord, my bhakta. So we'll go to verse number 14. It's a very, very beautiful verse. Santushta satatam yogi. Yatatma dridha nishchayaha. Mayar pitamano buddhihi. Yo madbhaktas same priyaha. Yo madbhakta same priyaha. Yo means yaha. So when Krishna says yaha in the Bhagavad Gita, what he means is yaha means whoever. Yaha is a pronoun that means whoever that person may be. It could be male or female. It could be black or white. He could be short or tall. He could be vegetarian, non-vegetarian. Maybe he goes to church or temple or never goes to the temple. Whether he wears a tie or doesn't wear a tie, whether he wears a dhoti or he wears orange clothes, it does not matter. If you have these qualities, whoever he may be or she may be, ya madbhakta, my devotee, sa me priyaha, he is dear to me. So we'll talk a little bit about this. Why does the Lord say that he is dear to me? But what are the qualities? Santushta. Santushta means content. Satatam santushta or satatam yogi. Santushta means he is content. Satatam yogi. And yogi means the one whose mind is always connected. Yoga comes from yuj, to connect. So one whose mind is always connected to me. Or here yogi has been interpreted as a meditator. So one who is always in meditation. What do we mean by satatam yogi? Always in meditation? How can I do that? I have to work. I have to cook. I have to do surgery. I'm a surgeon or I'm... How can I be always in meditation? We'll talk about that. Satatam yogi, yatatma. Yatatma means one whose mind is under his control, whose body is under his control. So one who's self-controlled. And dridha nishchaya, firm determination. You must have that. Mai arpit mano buddhihi. His mind and intellect is arpit, is dedicated to me, given to me, always stationed in me. Yo madbhakta same priyaha. So let us take each value at a time. Santushta, I think the reason the Lord gives this first, and not only that, but later on in another verse, in the 19th verse, again he repeats santushta. So twice he has given out of the 32 values. Because contentment, santushta, is a very, very important quality. Because what we find is that unless you are satisfied, contented, You will always be agitated, you will be always unhappy. Sri Shankaracharya ji in this Bhaj Govindam says it very beautifully. He says, Mood jahihi dhanagam trishna, kuru sad buddhim manasi vitrishna, yallabase nija karmo patam, vittam tena vinodaya chittam. He says, Moodha, actually he addresses us as fool, Shankaracharya ji, which I think is appropriate. I totally agree with him. But he says, Moodha jahihi dhanagam krishna, give up this mad. Trishna means this mad thirst, like when a person is in the desert and he hasn't had any water for a whole day, how thirsty he wants for a sip. That's how our desire is for money. Dhanagam trishna, we have this complete fascination, we must have it. He says, give up that. Kuru sad buddhim manasi vitrishna, and get your mind filled with qualities of that sat buddhi, of that supreme lord. So instead of all the time thinking about money, start thinking about that higher entity. You can call it God or Jesus or Krishna or Brahman, doesn't matter what you call it. And yallabase nija karmo patam vittam tena vinodaya chittam, and whatever you get as a result of your honest hard effort, be content with that. Vittam tena vinodaya chittam, be happy with that. So we'll say, does that mean that one shouldn't work hard or earn money? No, nowhere Shankaracharya ji doesn't say that. What he says is that first of all, your effort should be hard and should be honest. It should be proper, sincere effort. And at the end of the day, you get what you deserve. As long as I have put the effort, Lord, I will get it. But my activity should not be only for money. Because that is what the idea is, that okay, my whole day is just centered on dhanagama trishna. I have this thirst for money. And I just want money, money, money. And so then what happens is that only becomes your goal, becomes your purpose. And then everything you judge by money, what kind of house he has, that great a person he is, what kind of car he drives, what kind of bank balance he has, what kind of position, is he a CEO of a company. And so we judge people just by these qualities. So he says that happens when you give undue importance to material things. And ultimately he says the most important thing is spiritual. And so you need money for retirement and yes, for your house and all that, but keep it in its right place. That I need money to help myself and to serve the world, like we talked about last week. Money is an instrument to serve, but if the money is given to somebody who is unintelligent, it becomes a suicidal weapon that hurts him and society. So he says, always be content. Oh Lord, I am so grateful. Whatever I have is given to me by you. This beautiful world you have given me, this body, this mind, this intellect, this ability to work, everything is yours. And so whatever I have is dedicated to you. But I am content. I am happy. And he says, satatam yogi. He's always in meditation. Now, how can I always be in meditation? Okay, half an hour in the morning I do, 1 hour at the most, you are telling, but I have to go to work, I have to cook for my children, I have to vacuum. So what we mean is that, what is meditation? Meditation is, the mind is centered in the self, centered in the Lord, that's what we do. And the thoughts are, whether they are there or not, I am not involved in the thoughts. I am not involved in the body, the mind, or the intellect's activities, because I am centered in that self. So a true yogi, while he or she is doing their normal activities, keeps their attention on the self and watches the body, mind and intellect working. It cannot be done when you're doing delicate surgery. You know, you're doing delicate surgery and then you say, you know, I am that consciousness, aham brahmas. You can't do that because there you need your full attention. If you're doing a, you know, major dental procedure. But when I'm doing something that does not need too much attention, when I'm just going for a walk or on the treadmill or doing the dishes or doing some routine work, even watching TV, instead of getting totally involved in that, you know, some people get so involved. Oh, look at this character in the soap opera. He's so bad. Why does he do that? And how come she cannot see through him? You know, because the heroine is, poor thing, is being bamboozled by, and we know it because the author has told us. And so they get so angry at the TV and, you know, they start talking and they think these characters are real. It is all a creation of somebody's imagination, whether it's a movie or... So look at this world as a TV, as a show, and just watch it and see that how each person, look at the, here, how different everybody is from everybody else. Look at your own children, how different they are from each other. Swami Ishwarananda ji says, he says, we have five fingers and no one is, nothing of them is close to each other. They're all so different. So watch the variety of the world and enjoy it. Do not get so involved. And that is called meditation, where you can watch what is happening and see that it's just a joke. It's just a fun. It's a play. There is a divine writer and the play is going on and I'm here to enjoy the play. And with that attitude, when you work in the world, then A, your work that is gets dedicated to the Lord because you constantly remember Him. Secondly, you don't get so involved and affected and so miserable and so, you know, sorrowful about what is happening. And keep your mind. Swami Ishwarananda ji says, one time he told me, he says, just observe your mind at all times. What is my mind doing at this moment? The moment you start doing that, the mind loses its hold on you because the mind has so much power. It can make me happy, it can make me sad, make me suffer. But if you say, okay, mind, you are unhappy, but I am watching that unhappiness, then immediately that unhappiness becomes less. So, satatam yogi. Somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, Swamiji, how long should I meditate? Swamiji said 24 hours a day. That is how long you should meditate. The idea being that always remember the Lord and be focused on that. And do not take the world too seriously. World is not important. Only thing important to be taken seriously is my spiritual growth. Everything else is okay. It's not that important. Everything is fine. So how about my children? Yes, children too. When we ask a mother, don't take your child, she gets upset. But anyway. Santushta satatam yogi yatatma. Yatatma means self-control. And that is emphasized in all the religions. That too much of sense indulgence, even in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, who is a true meditator? Who is balanced in his activity, balanced in his rest, balanced in his diet. So that means not too much diet. Obviously, we know that. Now all the, you know, folks tell us eat in moderation, eat healthy, eat vitamins, proteins, all that. I don't need to tell. Everybody is an expert. Then they say moderation in sleep. That's very important. Why? Because either we oversleep, like weekend, okay, I'm going to sleep till 10 or 11. Or weekdays, oh, I have so much to do. I have so much to do. They only sleep 3 hours, 4 hours. So they say, live a life of moderation, live a life of self-control. Do not overindulge. Like there was a study that people average spend 5 hours in front of the TV. And we don't need to do that. It's such a waste of time, you know, because you're just wasting your time and your senses in useless watching TV or surfing the net. So utilize, we're not saying that you don't watch TV, don't watch the news, but you know, people go on and on from morning to evening, that bomber, okay, it happened, a big incident, but from morning to evening, that's all they are watching, you know, that constantly, then what happens is your mind gets filled with those negative thoughts, you know, that the whole world is coming to, especially when that September 11 happened, from morning to night, the TV was bombarding people with those images, you know, those two towers falling. And people from morning to evening, that's all they are watching. And actually, there was serious increase in psychiatric problems. People thought that whole of America is being attacked and, you know, we are going, the world is going to end. And a lot of psychiatrist business increased a lot in those days because everybody was, that's all they were watching. So they say, live a life of self-control. Don't listen to unnecessary things. Don't hear gossip that you don't need to. Don't speak unnecessarily. You know, sometimes we just go on and on and on. Speak in moderation, activity, you know, work. Again, the work should be limited. You know, you don't need to work 16 hours a day and, you know, just kill yourself. Work in moderation and live a life of self-control so that the extra time, the extra energy you have, which is now wasted in worldly pursuits, can be turned for spiritual directions. So, Dridha Nishchaya. Dridha Nishchaya is a very, very important That means I should have a firm determination that I am going to reach that truth, that reality, that God. I'm going to reach Him now in this life itself, not next life, five lives from now, but today, this time, right now. And no matter what happens, even if my life is gone, even if I have to give up, but I'm not going to give up, no matter what sacrifice I have to make. In the Upanishad, it says very beautifully, Na ayam atma balahinena labhyaha. This atma, this self, this consciousness cannot be obtained by somebody who is balahin, who is a weakling. You know, Swami Tejomayananda ji calls it a pajama personality. You know, in India, we have those loose pajamas, those white ones, and they flop from side to side. It's very comfortable to sleep at night. But lot of us are like that. Pajama, theek hai, ho gaya to ho gaya, nahi ho gaya to nahi ho gaya. Bhagwan mila to bhi theek hai, nahi mila to koi baat nahi, agle janam. So the idea being that if I get God, it's okay. If I don't, how does it matter? It's not that important. My more important is this, my family, my work. After 65, after 70, tab sochenge, you know, I'll think about it. So have a firm determination, even if I have to, no matter life and death, it should become a life and death issue, should be the most important goal of my life. Life and death reminds me of a little story. This man comes from the doctor and he's very stressed out. His wife said, "What happened? Is everything okay?" He said, "Well, doctor gave me some pills and told me to take one pill a day for the rest of my life." So she said, "Well, that's nothing to be stressed about. So many people take one pill a day. Why are you so stressed out?" He says, "Well, doctor gave me only 4 pills." I hope it was not Pankaj. Were you the doctor? He said, "No." And it wasn't me either. But so you know, this determination, dridha nishchaya. Dridha means firm. Nishchaya means I have decided that no matter what. And that's what these saints, if you look at the life of Mirabai, how many problems she had. Look at life of Tukaram and Narsi Mehta. How much difficulties they had in their life. But their goal was clear. You know, self. Look at Jesus. Look at Saint Francis. How much determination they had to reach that truth. And dridha nishchaya. So that is very, very important. Then he says, Mai arpit mano buddhihi. So in me, Mai arpit is offered mind and intellect. So that mind and intellect is constantly upon me. Sorry, Krishna, that's not possible. I'm not going to do. How can I do that? 24 hours a day I think about you. What am I going to do? How am I going to do my work? I have so much to do. So Swami Chinmayananda tells a very beautiful story about this. So he says in India, as you know, that in some of the smaller villages, there's no water, running water. So the men, of course, go to the farms to farm, and the women's job is to collect water. So they go to the walk to the river and have 2 or 3 pots which are pretty heavy, filled with water, on their head, and they put one on top of the other, and they must be very strong because they can carry those heavy pots of water, and they balance them perfectly and they walk back. And that water is used for, you know, cooking and cleaning the house and all. Bathing, a lot of times people will do at the river, but this water is used for other household things. And so there, as they are walking, now you and I, if we had to walk, even with one pot, you know, we would be so nervous. But they are fine. You know, they are carrying one on top of the other. And are they scared or nervous? No, they are walking fine. And while they are walking, they are picking up pebbles and throwing at each other, making jokes and pulling somebody's hand or somebody's sari, or and just laughing and giggling. And you say, how can they do that? You know, they have these 3, and they're walking coolly, you know, without any strain, and enjoying themselves and laughing and seeing what is happening and gossiping about boyfriends. No, all those things, you know, this boy said this. All that is happening, but the pots don't fall. You know why? Because even while they're doing all their activities, a part of their mind is stationed on the pots. They know that I'm carrying those three parts. So their head is kept straight. Their hands may be moving. Their body may be going. But their head is kept straight. Why? Because she knows that I'm carrying these three parts. I can't drop them because they'll break. The water will spill. So just as this girl is able to walk and do all her activities and have fun, but keeps her attention on the parts, so a devotee of mine, Krishna says, that while he's doing their activities, a part of his mind, if your mind, he says, place it on me. Place it in me, mai arpit. Place it in me as the Lord, and then continue to do your activities. Do not stop. We are not saying that you stop working, but take me to work and keep your attention on me. Just remember me at all times. Just chant my name at times. If you have a couple of minutes, just chant the name Om Namah Shivaya, Shri Krishna, Sharanam Mama. Just do that. Just remember me and just dedicate all activities to me. Work with me in your heart. And just keep a little part of your mind on me. You don't have to put all your attention. I know you have to do your work. But while I'm, or like, if you, like, say, somebody, a doctor who is doing surgeries or seeing patients, in between surgeries, just take a second and just say, okay, Lord, I'm going to do my next case. A person who is teaching a classroom, you know, is teaching classes. So in between the classes, when she's going from one room to the other, or the children are coming, oh Lord, in this break, let me remember you. So what happens is the more you do that, it becomes a habit. Mai arpit mano buddhihi yo mad bhakta same priyaha. This is a very controversial line. People say, you mean the God is playing favorites? He says, one who has these qualities only I love, and one who doesn't have the qualities, I don't love. He says, don't you love all? He says, yeah, but there are some people who are special to me. Now, why does Krishna say, yo mad bhakta same priyaha? This devotee of mine is dear to me. I love him. Again, Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary gives a very beautiful story. He says there is this rich man and he goes to the temple. Very rich. He's young. He's not married yet. But his father has given him lots of money and inherited. So he's very, very rich. And he comes back. And when he comes back home, as you know, rich people, they have all these hangers on, these chamchas who are around them, who are, you know, trying to get their favor. So there are these three, four men. So he looks very pensive. So they said, what happened, sir? What happened? He said, I'm in love. He said, really? Oh, that's very good. You know, because they want, you know, him to get married. Who is she? Where did you see her? I saw her at the temple and I am in love. He says, really? So what did you say? And what did she say? And then what did you say? And what did she say? He says, she didn't say anything. He says, why? He says, she doesn't even know I am in love with her. What do you mean? I just saw her coming out of the temple as I was going in. She's so pretty. I'm in love. Now this girl does not even know that this worm exists. She has never even thought about him. But he is in love. He's so much in love that, oh, I can't live without her. My life is incomplete. He doesn't even know her name, doesn't know where she lives, doesn't even know whether she's married or unmarried, knows nothing. But he says, I'm in love. So this is one-sided love. He loves her, and maybe later on, if he comes to know her and she likes him, it might happen. But it is one-sided love. He loves her. She does not even love him back. So similarly, we say, I love God. In fact, you know, when you talk about him, tears come to my eyes and I start weeping. Okay, that's very good. You love the God, but does God love you? Is God love you as much as you love him? He says, I do if you have these qualities. If you have these qualities, he says, even if you don't love me, you say, I don't care. I'm just going to keep doing my work. You don't have to go to the church or temple. You don't have to even, you know. But if you have these qualities, like we said, whether you're a vegetarian or a non-vegetarian, whether you wear a tie or a dhoti or orange clothes or a priest's smock, it doesn't matter. What matters is, do you have these qualities? Then I love you. So the idea being that It does not mean that God loves all, but one who is close to me. These are the divine qualities. These qualities we find in divine people, in saints. So those divine people are dear to me. So that is the meaning of this beautiful verse. So I think, like I said last time, we should write them down on a piece of paper, all these qualities. And then there are 32. And then just practice even one a day. And then check it off that this today, all day, I'm going to practice contentment. Today I'm going to keep my mind centered on the Lord. Today I'm going to, you know, practice determination, self-control. So as you do that, these 32 qualities, you know, in 32 days, and then you can again start. So what happens is these qualities get ingrained in your mind, and slowly, slowly, you start developing them all, and it becomes a habit. So that is the idea of giving these qualities. Any comments?
I took a Dhamma class one time about 20 years ago, and one quote I remembered was simply, "You become what you think about the most." You become what you think about the most. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
True.
Come closer to God the more you think about that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, like the caterpillar becomes a butterfly because it's just thinking about that butterfly, but and then it transforms into that beautiful, colorful. So that's the example they give. Yeah, you become what you think. Yeah.
Same with evil.
True. Yeah, because if you're constantly thinking about evil, then that's what you become. I think that's because what you think is as a result of your desires, your tendencies. That's what you think. That's what you speak, and that's how you act. So it all starts with the tendencies, with the desires, and then with the thoughts. So one has to be very careful about one's thoughts and about speech, because then that becomes the action. Well, if you see some crazy behavior, enjoy it. But you mean is something harmful somebody's doing?
Well, I just mean you see crazy behavior and you can say, oh, those people are, you know, nuts, or is that really a judgment, or is that just a comment?
No, it's a comment. It's okay as long as you don't label that person that. And then also then you don't go and tell that person unless the person asks for your opinion. As an observation, you can say, okay, this behavior is unusual or crazy or whatever. It's okay to observe it as long as you are not judging that person as good or bad based on that. And then sometimes you have to see the person's motive, why they are doing what they are doing. So unless you know the whole situation, yeah, if you start labeling them, or then you color all his actions with those particular glasses. So I think there's a fine line, like you said. Yeah, I think, yeah, again, a lot of the scientific advances and the new inventions and discoveries came because people were not content. Like it was too cold, and so somebody discovered fire, or people wanted to move around, so they discovered the wheel because they were not contented with walking. So they said there has to be a better means to get around. Yeah, so by content, we don't mean that you sit and do nothing, that you are a useless person. You have to improve yourself, you know, materially and scientifically, and all the new inventions. Athletes, if they're content, okay, the marathon can only be run in 2 hours and whatever, 45 minutes. So they'll say, no, I can run it in 2 hours and 40 minutes or 30 minutes. So why, you know, they, like the 4-minute barrier and all they talk about. So mankind is, the whole thinking is designed to excel. So we are not saying that you should not excel in your activity, but at the end of the day, be satisfied and contented with what you have. And also, I had talked about last time, I can repeat it, that what we do is we are content spiritually, but we are discontented materially. Materially, I need to get more and more. Spiritually, 1 hour I went to the Gita class, that's enough. Now I'll see you next Sunday, Bhagwan. You know, so, or I went to church or temple or 5-10 minutes I read, you know, that's it. Or I just quickly do the aarti. So spiritually we are content. That's enough. You know, I don't have time all day to sit in front of God. But materially we are discontented. So they say materially you should be contented and spiritually you should be discontented. That means that I have to keep working till I reach that goal. So Swami Chinmayananda, see these great Mahatmas who are the realized masters, when they work, they do not work out of discontent, and they do not work out of a desire. It was not his vasana or a tendency that by fulfilling that he would become happy or contented. That was not. See, when these great people work, they work out of a spontaneous outpouring of love because they have seen themselves as reality. When I know that I am that reality, then I see everybody, everything as that reality. So they are all me. So when he saw that this beautiful knowledge of the Upanishads, which he had learned from his guru, Swami Tapovan Maharaj, who is on the left-hand side, when he learned that in the Himalayas, he told his guru that the people in the plains of India are suffering in ignorance, and I wish to share this knowledge with them, because he himself didn't know all that, because he grew up in Kerala, he was a journalist, and somehow he ended up in the Himalayas, and there when he was exposed to this knowledge, he realized how little he knew beforehand. And so the years he had spent with his master learning the truth, he wanted to share it out of spontaneous outpouring of love. And his master actually even told him, he said, Chinmaya, look, if you go down in the plains and you'll be running around here and there, you'll get so involved in building and organizing and all that, you will lose your vision of this truth. So stay here, continue to meditate and learn, and whoever wants to learn will come up, like you came to learn from me. Swami Chinmayananda went to the Himalayas to learn from his guru. So whoever is interested will come. You are going to, he actually told him that. But he said, no, Guruji, I feel that it is my calling. I should do it. And so then he asked his guru's permission again, and then his guru gave him. So then he started traveling from city to city, just sharing this knowledge. It was not his idea to build a mission or have an organization. His first talk, there were only four people in Pune. When he first spoke the Upanishad, there were four people. I don't know where he found them. He said, you want to hear about Upanishads? I'll tell you. And so he started his talk with four, and slowly, by the time he finished that Upanishad, there were like 20, 30 people. They said, oh, this Mahatma seems to know what. And he used to speak in English, you know, which in those days, they said, the Vedas, if you talk in English, you are committing a sin because it's in Sanskrit. It is the divine language, Devi Bhasha hai. So you cannot talk and teach about it in English. But he did because he was a revolutionary. And then slowly as he traveled from place to place, more and more people started getting interested. And then they needed a place, you know, to arrange the lectures. Then he started study groups. Then he started Bal Vihar, children's classes. And so they needed a place and they needed a building. And then they needed to have an organization to kind of coordinate because it started spreading the whole of India. People started, you know, wherever he would go, eventually thousands of people used to come. I remember attending his lectures in Chowpatty and Shivaji Park and in Bombay. And there used to be thousands of people. You had to sit way in the back and you had to listen with a loudspeaker. They didn't have this visual thing. You couldn't see him even. You could just see a little, you know, somebody there. But his voice was so powerful. So it grew. So that's how ultimately the organization came. And then organization helps. Like if we didn't have this building, how would we meet and how would we discuss and our children are studying. So it does not come out of discontent. For these Mahatmas, it comes out of a spontaneous outpouring. Like Jesus, he did not have an idea that I'm going to start a movement called Christianity throughout the world. He just said, I'm going to preach to these disciples because I have learned this truth. You know, he had heard from the Lord. And then these disciples then went on and spread the knowledge throughout the world. So their working is different. But their goal is high. That's true. Their goal is high. You know, if you have a business and you want to expand it, like now Bill Gates, you can say, well, he did, you know, build this huge empire, Microsoft. That's good. But then how much service he's doing? He's spending billions every year. He has this foundation where they're working in Africa and all over the world. And it's his, you know, business continues to grow. Money continues to grow. When you give it for a good cause, it never gets less because he has endless and he gives you more. So you never. So it's good because only if I'm successful, then only I can help the world. If Bill Gates had no money at all, he was just a simple computer programmer, he wouldn't be able to help. So you earn money, but then you share it and help others. These ideas are repeated in the verses, but the point is that by repeated hammering, they become part of our thinking. So that next time when I'm working, I should think, okay, what does the Gita say about this? Then every action becomes colored by the Gita, by it gets influenced by it.